All right, I guess we're ready. Okay, all right, hello everybody. Today we're going to have a walkthrough of the code for the class ArrayLinearList, which implements the interface LinearList, or in other words, it gives us an implementation of the data structure LinearList by employing an array to represent or store the elements in an individual list. Now, before looking at the code for the class, I'd like to just go through how we intend to use this class, or how we intend to use instances of ArrayLinearList. And this would be useful when we are actually looking at the code so that we can verify that the code will in fact let us use instances the way we intend to use them. Okay. Now, first off, the implementation of LinearList that we're looking for is a general purpose implementation of linear lists. And by this, I mean that the implementation should permit us to have any number of linear lists. So some users may want in their program to have 5 linear lists. Somebody else may want 20. Somebody may want 100. Also, the class should not impose any limits on the size of a linear list. So it should be possible for one user to have one list which has 5 elements, and another list that has 200 elements, and another list with 5,000 elements. The only restriction we're going to be placing is that the elements that comprise a linear list be of the type object or a subtype or subclass of object. So we won't be able to directly place primitive data types inside a linear list. So you couldn't put ints and floats, for example. Okay. Now, to use a linear list, we will need to be able to create an instance. And having created an instance, typically an empty instance, then one would want to add elements to the list or remove elements from the list or print a list, find its size, and so on. Okay. So we envision our user creating instances of a linear list using a statement such as this one, where the user might say, I want to create a linear list of type array linear list. Its name is A. And then to the variable A, we assign a new instance of a linear list. And this 100 here means that the initial capacity, okay, the length of the array that's going to hold the elements, will start off at the value 100. Okay. All right, here's another one, which says we're going to have an array linear list whose name is B, and the list B is assigned as value an instance that has an initial capacity which is determined by a constructor for the class array linear list that takes no parameters. Okay. If you go back here to the first one, the expression on the right, new ArrayLinearList 100, is going to cause the constructor for ArrayLinearList that takes a parameter of type integer to be invoked. And that constructor would then create an array called element that has 100 spots or length 100. This one here would invoke the constructor for ArrayLinearList that takes 0 parameters. And that constructor will create an array called element that's going to have some default number of spots in it. Okay, as we'll see, that default is going to be 10. Okay. All right, this statement here simply declares a variable of type ArrayLinearList, a variable C, and C is going to be able to refer to an ArrayLinearList. At present, C is assigned the value null because we haven't assigned an array linear list to it. Okay. All right, so going back through these three, the first statement declares a variable A of type array linear list, which means A can refer to an instance of an array linear list. In addition, An instance of an array linear list is created that has an initial capacity of 100, and A refers to or points to that instance. Here, we declare a variable B of type array linear list that can also refer to an instance of an array linear list. On the right-hand side, a new instance of an array linear list with initial capacity 10 is created, and B points to or refers to it. In both cases, the array linear lists created have a size that is 0. In other words, they are empty. Here, we declare a variable C that is of type array linear list, but it is not assigned any instance of an array linear list, and therefore C is left with its default value. In Java, variables of type object or subtype of object, in particular array linear list is a subtype of object, are initialized to have the value null. So following the declaration of C here, C has the value null. It doesn't refer to any instance of array linear list. Okay, so it's not referring to an empty array linear list, it's just referring to a null list. Okay. All right, here's an alternative way to define or declare variables that can refer to array linear list instances. We define a variable D whose type is linear list. Okay. Recall, linear list is an interface. Okay. So D is of type linear list. D can refer to any instance of a class that implements the interface linear list. So under the assumption that array linear list implements linear list, this would be a valid statement. Okay. Okay. Right, here's another one. E is of type linear list, not of type array linear list. E can refer to any instance of a class that implements linear list. Now later we'll see that array linear list is only one possible class that we're going to study, which implements linear list. There'll be other ones, for example, chain. So I could, for example, have said E equals new chain, okay? In which case D of type linear list would refer to an array linear list, and E would be referring to a chain. So that gives you some degree of flexibility that you didn't have when you were using array linear list. Here, each variable has to refer to an instance of array linear list. Having declared C to be of type array linear list, I cannot then assign to C an instance of chain, even though chain implements linear list. Okay. In this case, D, E, and F could be assigned chains as values, or array linear lists, or any other instances of a class that implements linear list. Okay. Now, even though using this scheme here, where we declare the variable of type linear list, affords us some flexibility in terms of what these variables can refer to, it does come with a cost. So, for example, if the class array linear list were to implement a method that is not a method of linear list, okay, and if you went with this blue set of definitions, then to perform a method of array linear list that is not in linear list on D, for example, we would have to typecast D to array linear list first. Whereas here, you don't have to do any typecasting. It's already of type array linear list. And you can perform any method on A without a typecast, any method that's a method of array linear list, regardless of whether it's a method of linear list or not. Okay. So that there are pros and cons to declaring variables of type linear list versus declaring them of type array linear list. Right, the way we envision using a linear list, if you want to determine and output the size of the array linear list A, well, then we would simply use a statement like this. A dot size would determine its size, and then it would be printed out using the standard system.out.println method. Okay. If you want to add an element to the array linear list A, we could say a dot add. We give the index of the new element. It's supposed to go in as index 0. And then the element itself. Okay. Notice that we said in our last lecture, the way we are setting up our linear lists, we won't be able to insert or add to these linear lists elements of a primitive data type. So it would be illegal to say a.add 0, 2. Okay. In order to add the int 2, we need to wrap it into Java's wrapper type for ints, and that wrapper type is called integer. Okay. So the statement new integer 2 would invoke the constructor for the class integer, and that constructor would then create an object whose value is the int 2. Okay. All right, here's another one. You want to add a 4 to a linear list B so that its index is 0. We need to first typecast, or we need to first wrap the 4 into integer. Okay, and that's done by creating a new instance of integer whose value is 4. Okay. If you want to output a linear list, then we'd like to output it simply by using the statement system.out.println A. Okay. Now, when you try to output instances of the object data type or subtypes of object, okay, so array linear list would be a subtype of object, then Java automatically or by default would invoke the toString method for that class. Okay. So this statement here is actually equivalent to saying system.out.println a.toString. Okay. However, putting the .toString is redundant. Java automatically invokes toString when it finds an object variable name inside of a print statement. Okay. And what we're expecting here is that on your screen would be displayed the elements in the linear list in the order in which they appear in the linear list A. Okay. Right, you want to remove the element whose index is 0 from the array linear list B. Okay. And here's another example of using an array linear list in a program statement. We may check if the array linear list is empty, and if it's empty, and then we want to add the integer 5 into position 0. Okay. All right, so that's, I guess, some examples of Java statements we envision using or writing when we want to perform different operations, such as find the size, output, add elements, remove elements, and so on. Okay. All right, so now we've seen how we plan to use the class. We want to be able to create lists by declaring variables of that type, as shown in the previous slide. We want to be able to perform operations on lists using statements like the one shown on this slide. Okay, let's take a look at how we might create an array of linear lists. Okay, so if you want to create an array of linear lists, for example, an array X, okay, which is going to be of length 4, okay, we could declare the variable x of type linear list, okay, and assign to it a new array. Okay. So we assign to it a new instance of an array. The array has 4 spots in it. The length is 4, indexed x0, x1, x2, and x3. Following the execution of this statement here, the values of x are all null. So x0 is null, x1 is null, x2 and x3 are all null. This statement only creates an array x that has 4 spots in it, and each spot in x is able to refer to something that is of type linear list. This statement doesn't actually create instances of a linear list. In fact, you cannot create instances of an interface. You can only create instances of a class, not even of an abstract class. Okay. So this statement here simply declares X to be a one-dimensional array of length 4. Each position in X has the initial value null. Okay. Now we can assign to the different positions of X instances of linear lists. So for example, X0 here is assigned a new instance of a linear list whose initial capacity is 20. And, of course, that linear list assigned in this previous line here is empty. Okay. All right, this statement here assigns to X1 a new instance of a chain. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, a chain is another class we're going to see that implements the interface linear list. Since both array linear list and chain implement the interface linear list, these assignments here are valid assignments. Okay. The instance of chain assigned to X1 here will also be the empty instance. Okay. All right, X2 gets a different empty instance of chain. And then here, X3 is assigned an empty instance of array linear list, having the initial default capacity of 10. Okay. Now we can use this array in a for statement, for example, like this, where first time through, we're going to add an element to x0, then add an element to x1, then to x2, and finally to x3. The element being added will be the integer 1, the integer 0 first, and then 1, and then 2, and then 3. Okay. Interestingly, Java is going to be able to figure out which add method to invoke for the different lists. Okay. Associated with each instance of a linear list, Java will keep track of its base type. So here, with x0, it's going to know that x0 at this time refers to an instance of array linear list. X1 at this time refers to an instance of a chain. X2 refers to an instance of a chain. X3 refers to an instance of an array linear list. Okay. As a result, when this for loop is executed, when I equals 0, the add method of array linear list will be invoked automatically. When I equals 1, the add method of chain would be invoked. When I equals 2, again, the add method of chain will be invoked. And finally, when I equals 3, the add method of array linear list will be invoked. Okay. So that's not something you have to worry about. That's something Java worries about. With each instance of an object, Java keeps track of its base type. What is the type it had when it was created? Okay. And knowing that, it is able to invoke the proper methods. Okay. All right. So much for how we are going to use things and what the capabilities are. Let's now turn our attention to looking at the code itself. Okay. All right. So if you open up the file arraylinearlist.java, the first line you're going to see in there is a line which has a slash star star array implementation of linear list star slash. Okay. All right. This is a comment line in Java. As you know, Java has three different types of comments. There are comments that begin with a slash star, and those are comments that can span one or more lines. So they begin with a slash star and they end with a star slash. There are comments that begin with double slashes, a slash slash, and then everything following the slash slash on that same line is a comment. The third type of comment is the one shown here, which begins with a slash star star. So slash star star has a special significance in Java. It refers to comments that are to be interpreted by Java's document generator called Java Doc. Okay. So if you have a whole bunch of programs, then if you turn Java Doc loose on these programs, it'll scour the codes looking for all comments that begin with a slash star star. And then using the information in these slash star star comments, it will create documentation for all of your programs. So for example, if you look into the codes that you downloaded, you'll find there are a whole bunch of HTML files there. For example, there's a file called index.html, or there's a file called allnames.html. If you open up these files, you'll find that these files contain lists of classes, lists of methods, lists of variables, lists of parameters that appear in the codes that you've downloaded. Along with each name, the HTML file gives you an indication of what that name stands for, what does the method return, what kind of exceptions does the method throw, and so on. And this information is garnered from the information placed in the slash star star comments that are there inside the codes that you have downloaded. Okay. So in some of these slash star star things, you'll see that there are tags. We'll see one later today. For example, there may be an at returns tag, or at return tag, which tells you what the method returns. Or you might have an at parameter tag, which tells you what different parameters signify. Okay. So Java collects all this information together when you run Java Doc. It creates the HTML files, thereby giving you an automatic way to create nice documentation for all of the programs that you have. Now, in order for Java Doc to work right, the slash star star comment has to immediately precede the class, the method, or the variable name that you're trying to document. If there's space between the comment, so if in between you've got other statements, well, then Java Doc doesn't do its job. Okay. And in this particular case, we actually have some statements inserted between this comment and the class statement. As a result, this document statement doesn't really serve any useful function as far as Java Doc is concerned. Okay. All right, the next statement there is the package statement. We've organized all of the programs that you've downloaded into packages. Packages are really synonymous to folders. When you have a large number of programs, it's nice to organize these programs into different folders so that you can easily find a program. Okay. So, for example, if you look at all the email you get, okay, when you have only 4 or 5 pieces of email that somebody has sent to you, you can probably save them all in the same folder. If you have thousands of emails that have accumulated over a period of time, it's very hard to search through a folder that contains several thousand emails to find a particular email of interest to you. So you organize your emails. You maybe create a folder for all the emails that came to you from John, or another folder for all the emails that came from Sebastian, another folder for all the emails that came from Mary, and so on. Now, if John has been sending you a large number of emails, you may further partition the folder labeled John. Maybe have a subfolder labeled year 2000, another one labeled year 2001, another one labeled year 2002. Or you may create folders by topics, all emails related to a particular course in one folder, all emails for another course in another folder. Okay. So we're accustomed to using folders to organize all the emails we receive so that it becomes easy to later retrieve different emails. We do the same thing for Java programs. If you have only 4 or 5 programs, you can throw them into the same folder and there's no problem locating a program from that folder. But when you have hundreds of them, it gets hard to find out where different programs, or it gets hard to locate a particular program from a single folder. So you partition your programs into multiple folders using some criteria of similarity. In the case of the codes you've downloaded, we have one folder which can call data structures, and that contains all of the classes that implement different data structures we're talking about in this course. Then you have another folder called applications, which contains the codes for application problems that are solved in the book. You have another folder called miscellaneous for codes that don't fit into any of the other categories. So we have some bunch of folders there. And each folder is really a package in Java terminology. Okay. All right, so this line here says that this particular class that we're defining is a member of the package or of the folder called data structures. Okay. The package statement is optional. If it's present, it has to be the first line of code. Okay. Because comments don't count as being a first line of code. The first line of code is required to be a package statement, if at all there is going to be a package statement in your code. All right, a package statement would then be followed by import statements. For example, this one here, which says import java.util.star. Import statements basically tell the Java compiler where to look for other classes that are used in this particular code. So in the code for array linear list, we are going to utilize some classes that are predefined in Java. In particular, we're going to use a class called iterator, which we'll see in the next lecture. And for Java to locate the class iterator, we have provided a statement here which says, look into the package java.util. Now, any package name that begins with Java is a standard Java package. The star here says that we're importing all of the classes that are defined in this package. Okay. I could have, in this particular case, since iterator is the only class of interest to this, to the code for array linear list, I could have simply said array import java.util.iterator. Okay. But most of the time, we're interested in a multiple of classes from a package, and it's easier to just put the star here. That way, the compiler does the work of searching for the class rather than you're identifying every class from that package that you need. Okay. Right, you can have many import statements. So the next one in this particular file, arraylinearlist.java, is one that imports utilities.star. Okay. Now this package doesn't begin with the name Java, so it's not a standard Java package. It's one of the packages that you downloaded. All right, we're going to need classes that are in this package. In particular, we're going to need a class in this package which is used to resize one-dimensional arrays. Okay. The way Java is able to find this package, utilities, is by affixing to the paths in class path. Okay. So it'll take each of the paths in class path and to the end of it, stick in the folder name utilities and see if it can find that particular folder. Okay. So utilities or this folder name only completes the path specified in class path. And that's why if you don't set class path correctly, it's unable to use the path specified in that variable class path together with the name utilities to locate the package that you're talking about. All right, finally we come to the statement for the class itself. Okay. Now if this Java doc statement had been moved from there to just come here, then Java doc would have used this comment in telling us that array linear list actually is an array implementation of linear list. Okay. All right, so this is kind of a somewhat standard header for a class. We're declaring the class to be a public class, which means that everybody can access it. If we had dropped the public statement, then it would have a default access, which would be only within the package. So other programs that are written in the same package or folder would be able to access the class. You could have protected, in which case only classes that extend array linear list would have access to the class. You could have private, which would mean that nobody other than things within the class would have access to it. Okay. Right, we're saying that it implements linear list. This only tells the Java compiler that somewhere in there you better have an implementation for every method in the interface linear list. It also tells the compiler that it is legal for you to typecast instances of array linear list into linear list. Okay. Now, associated with each instance of a linear list, we're going to have two variables. One is a one-dimensional array element of type object, and another one is an integer variable called size. So these we refer to as the data members. These are variables associated with an instance. Okay. So if you have three linear lists created, there will be three variable size, each one associated with one of those instances. Similarly, there will be three arrays called element, each one associated with a different instance of that linear list. All right, so our convention would be we'll first declare the data members associated with each instance, and then we'll follow that with a code for the remaining methods, or the codes for the constructors and the other methods of the class. Okay. All right, so this kind of gives you a top-level view of what the code for array linear list looks like. You have the package statement, you have the import statements, then you have the class statement, and then you declare all of the variables. In this case, we only have variables associated with instances. You also may have a variable associated with the class itself. Those are typically static variables. So, for example, if we had a variable static int number of lists, that would be a variable that's not associated with every individual instance, but with the class as a whole, keeping track of the number of lists that have been created, for example. All right, the data members then are followed by the constructors and other methods used in the class. Okay. Now, let's take a look at some of the methods. The first one is a constructor. Okay. All right, this is a constructor. Constructors have the same name as the class. Okay. And this is a constructor that has a single integer parameter. So this is the constructor that's called, for example, when you say new array linear list 100, or new array linear list 20, or new array linear list 1000. Okay. All right, at the top we have a Java doc comment used to create documentation by Java doc. Just tells you what it does. It also tells you that it throws an exception. Okay. Now, we haven't put a throws statement here. For methods that throw an exception that is not caught in the class, you would normally have a throws statement which lists the type of exception that may be thrown. However, that is required only when we are talking about exceptions that are not of type run type exception or of type error. So it's not the case that every single exception has to be listed here. If it were, every single method that did arithmetic would have to list an exception, like an overflow exception or a divide by zero exception. Okay. You need to list only exceptions that are not of type runtime exception or of type error. Okay. So here we haven't listed anything because we aren't throwing any such exception that is not caught. Okay. All right, so we check. We make sure that the initial capacity that has been asked for is at least one. If it is less than one, we throw an exception saying you can't do this. This comment here simply says that the reason I'm not initializing the value of size is because Java by default is going to set its value to zero, and that's the value that I want at this time. Okay. It's not that I have forgotten to initialize the value of size. Right, this could be useful if somebody is later translating from Java to, say, C++, which does not initialize its variables. Then the translator would see this comment and say, gee, Java is nice, C++ isn't. C++ doesn't do this initialization. I better put in a statement here which says size equals zero. And then down here, we create the array which has the proper initial capacity of type object. All right, another constructor. Okay. All right, this is the default constructor. It takes no parameters. And all it does is it invokes the constructor that we had on the previous slide with the initial capacity arguments of parameters set to 10. Okay. So the use of the variable this is kind of by convention in Java. If you invoke the method this, it's a reference to the constructor for the same class whose signature matches the parameter list here. So by this statement here, we are invoking the constructor for array linear list that has a integer as its parameter. Okay. All right, if you look at the method isEmpty, pretty simple. You just check the value of size. If it's zero, you return true. If it's not zero, you return false. Another method, it returns the size of the linear list, we simply return the value of the variable size. All right, here's a method that's not in the interface linear list, but useful in the development of our codes. Check index. It basically verifies that the index that's been provided is a legal index. It corresponds to the index of one of the elements in our linear list. So if our linear list has a size, say 10, then the allowable indexes are 0 through 9. If the size is 5, the 5 elements are indexed 0 through 4. Okay. So an illegal index would be an index that is smaller than 0, okay, or an index that is greater than or equal to size. Okay. In both of these cases, we have an index that doesn't correspond to an element in the linear list, and a check index will then throw an exception. All right, so with check index implemented, the get method becomes becomes somewhat simplified. We first check that the index provided by the user is valid, so we invoke check index. If it is valid, then we're going to come here. If it's not valid, check index throws an exception. Since we're not catching the exception, we aren't really going to end up here. We're going to pop up to the next level of code looking for a place where the exception is caught. If nothing catches the exception, the program will terminate or abort. Okay. All right, so if the index is valid, then we simply return the element corresponding to that index by pulling it out of the array. Okay. Well, let's skip this one. Let's take a look at the remove method. Okay. All right, so in the remove method, you're given the index of the element that is to be removed. The first thing you do is check the index, make sure there in fact is an element with that index. If there isn't, an exception is thrown, we don't go further in the code. You kind of pop back up looking for a place that's going to catch the exception. Most likely, again, no one's going to catch the exception here and the program will terminate. Okay. All right, if the index is legal, we're going to come down here. We take the element that is to be removed and save it because we're going to return that to the user at the end of our method. Then here we shift the elements to the right of the removed element, one spot to the left. Okay. Having completed the shift, we then take the rightmost position that did have an element prior to the shift but now doesn't, and we set a null there. Okay. The index of that element is size minus 1, so you first decrease the value of size, then you set the array position size, the old size minus 1, to null. The decrementing of size is necessary because following the removal, the number of elements in the list is 1 less than it was before, so we have to do this in any case. The assignment of null to that spot isn't essential. It's being done here only because Java uses garbage collection to find free space. And we don't want to leave a reference at position size minus 1, a reference to an element that's no longer part of the list. Okay. So this basically sets that reference to null so that later the garbage collector doesn't get confused and think that there's something there that you're using. All right, finally you return the element that was removed. Okay. Now, if you look at this code carefully, you'll realize that from the discussion we had in the previous lecture, we can do this thing here in a better fashion than moving elements one at a time a position to the left. We can simply use the Java method arrayCopy to copy all the elements from the right side one position left. Okay. So we can simplify this not just in terms of reducing the number of lines, but also in terms of making this thing run faster by not having this for loop here, but instead using the array copy method. Okay. All right, the add method, let's skip this. Okay. All right, I already mentioned this here. By using array copy in place of the for loop, we can get things to work a little bit faster. All right, finally, let's take a look at the two-string method. This is the method that is implicit when you do a print line. If you say system.out.println A, then implicit in there is an invocation to the method toString. Of course, you may invoke this method explicitly also, as we'll see in the code here, where we will make an explicit invocation of toString. Okay. All right, let's go through the code. Okay. ToString returns something of type string. Okay. To create this string representation of our linear list, we're going to make use of a string buffer. It's a standard class in Java. It's a class that permits you to append or remove items from a string in an efficient fashion. Okay. All right, so we define S to be of type string buffer, and then we assign to S an instance of string buffer that contains in it a left bracket. Okay. The output we're going to construct will actually be a left bracket followed by the representation of the first element, or element 0, comma, space, element with index 1, comma, space, element with index 2, comma, space, and so on, and then a right bracket at the end. Okay, so that's what we're building. Keep that kind of in your mind. Okay, so this part here just gets us that first left bracket. Okay, in the for loop, we're going to pick up the elements from our linear list one at a time, and put them into this string, and then follow it with a comma and a space. Okay, so we look at an element. If the element is null, then I'm just going to put the symbol null, comma, space into my string representation. If the element is not null, then to the string I'm going to append at the right end the string representation of the element. So here I explicitly call the toString method, which gets me the string representation of the ith element. I put that into the string buffer S, and I follow that with a comma and a space. Okay. Right, so in this for loop, I sequence through the elements of my linear list one at a time. If the element is null, I just put the word null followed with a comma and a space into the string buffer. If the element is not null, I convert the element to a string by explicitly invoking the toString method for that element, and then appending a comma and a space following the string representation of the element. Okay. Right, when I'm done with this for loop, okay, if you had one or more elements in your linear list, then you will notice we have an extra comma and space at the right end of the string buffer. If you had zero elements in your linear list, well, then we have no comma and space in the string buffer. Okay. So in the former case, this extra comma and space, which is at the right end of the string buffer, has to be deleted from the string buffer. To delete that extra comma and space, I invoke the delete method for a string buffer. So I say s.delete, and the delete method for the string buffer takes two parameters. The first parameter is the index of the first character in the string buffer that is to be removed. Okay. Now, s.length gives me the length of the string buffer. Okay. So if the string buffer's length is 8, there are 8 characters, and those characters are indexed 0 through 7. If s.length is 12, there are 12 characters in the string buffer. Those are indexed 0 through 11. Okay. So the second last character in the string buffer has an index that is length minus 2. Okay. Okay. So I give the index of the first character to remove, s.length minus 2. That's the index of this extra comma that I'm trying to take out. Okay. Then the extra space is at s.length minus 1. Okay. I want to remove the s.length minus 2 and s.length minus 1 characters. The format for the parameters for delete, the first one gives you the index of the first character to remove, so that's s.length minus 2. The second one gives you the index of the first character to keep. Okay. So we want to remove s dot length minus 2 and s dot length minus 1. So the first one to keep is s dot length, though actually there is no character at s dot length. Okay. But in any case, the convention would be you give the first one, you give the index of the one that follows the last one to take out, or the index of the first one to save, so that's s dot length. Okay. All right, so this command here would remove s dot length minus 2 and s dot length minus 1. So that's the last comma in the space. Right, having removed the last comma in the space, something that happens only if there was at least one element in the list, we then append a right bracket to the end. And finally, since we have to return something of type string, not of type string buffer, I create an instance of string by invoking the constructor for string. So the way you do that is you say new string. And string has a constructor that takes as parameter a string buffer instance. So I put in the string buffer instance, and this would cause the proper constructor for string to be invoked, which will convert the string buffer to a string and then return that string. Okay. All right, so to convert something to a string, we make use of a string buffer. We initialize it to the left bracket. You go through the elements of your linear list one at a time. If it's null, you just put in the word null, comma, and a space. If it's not null, you convert it to a string, put in a comma and a space. When you're done with all the elements, you have an extra comma and space at the end. You get rid of it. You append the right bracket, and then you typecast. Sorry, you don't typecast. You convert it to a string. Okay. All right. Now, you should be able to go through the rest of the codes yourself and understand them fairly well. All right, that'll be it for today.